So we're going to take a little bit of a different approach to a section of the sutra here. I'm not really going to work with the consider movement, stationary and such. For a more in-depth discussion on that, look up Nagarjuna and the Majjhimikans, and they will talk about that quite a bit, this this idea. But the next one, which we have, is this, it says, for the unified mind, which is in accord with the way, all self-centered striving ceases. So with this self-centered striving, with that falling away, also all of our doubt and irresolutions also vanish. Essentially what we lose here, if you want to call it a loss, it's an excellent loss. It's the kind of loss that you're hoping for, is you lose sense of hope. Which, if you lose hope, that's if I give you a coin and I tell you, you're going to lose the George Washington of the coin. That means the whole coin has to go missing. So the backside of that coin is the fear. And so both your hope and your fear also dissolve. They vanish. Once that happens, it says life in true faith is possible. What a weird word, faith. Buddhism does not at all use the word faith the way that monotheistic religions do. So when you see the word faith, it does not mean that you believe in some fairy tale without any intelligence at all. That's not faith. Not from the Buddhist perspective. It says, with a single stroke, we're free from bondage. And this stroke is the, you know, they're talking about in writing. So if you picked up your brush, if you were in China, you know, so you take your brush and one little, and that's it. Total liberation with just that mark. Done. As soon as you're done, it says nothing will cling to you, and you won't hold anything either. All the hooks and cords and nooses completely just fall off of you because you just kind of poof like smoke. At the same time, since you poof like smoke, there's nothing for you to hold on to either. Because smoke can't cling to anything. No structure there. So now we have all is empty. It all becomes incredibly clear, meaning all of the mystery is removed. There's no more secretiveness about it. And self-illuminating, which means by just looking at it, it makes everything quite apparent. And it says there's no extinction of mind's power, which means you don't have to do any concentration, studying, nothing. At all. Once you're in this state, it says that thoughts and emotions, the feelings, knowledge, and imagination are completely useless. They have no value whatsoever. That means that you are now in a state of suchness, also called the naked mind or the natural state. And it says there's neither self nor other than self. So there's, that's it. Okay, that's a whole lot of stuff to look at. So, borrowing from some of our class this week up here in the Minnesota, there's a couple of different things that I want to share with you guys. The first is, you see in the in that line where it says, nothing clings to us and we hold to nothing. So I'm going to teach you a new word for nothing that is it's important, because most of the time, nothing in English is kind of, I don't know, it doesn't have a whole lot of power to it. So if you've been studying Buddhism for any length of time, the word emptiness is a loaded word now. Ooh, that word means shunyata. That's some big stuff right there. But then when you say nothing can cling to you, you cling to nothing, we're just like, okay, and there's nothing there. Nichivo. What? There's your new word, Nichivo. That kind of nothing is serious nothing. That, let me make very, very clear, that can be the equivalent of void, vacuum, zero. Zero without the ability to be anything other than zero. It can't even go into negatives. It is absolute zero. Complete, total void. I'm giving you this term because I want to set up the exact total opposite of shunyata. This is zero potential. Shunyata, complete total potential, it's like quantum mechanics. You can even pick one thing within it, and the myriad, millions and trillions of others are also going to happen. Everything blossoms. Nichivo, nothing. There's not even a possibility of something arising or happening. It is a zero potential. It's what nihilists think death is. A complete unplugging, no longer existing, zap. Nichivo. Now, this is important. Because when it says in here, on this, in this text here, Nichivo clings to you. A absolute zero potential. Can cling to you. That means there's not even a possibility of anything clinging to you. Okay? This is very, very deep idea here. And it tells you that you yourself will cling to Nichivo. Means there is absolutely zero possibility of you clinging to anything at all. All potential is out. Completely negated. That is a naked state. But a naked state with zero potential. So why is nothing so important in this part of the text? Because if we understand nothingness at the relative level, those of you that have been through Lojong, if we understand this Nichivo at a mundane level, we begin to see a reflection of the activity or attitude of the persona. If you strip away all total potential for anything at all, ever, you will get a rise out of persona. Because the persona must have something attached to it, and it needs something to attach to. It always needs some kind of conditional thing. It has to have some kind. It even if there is nothing that it can attach to, the idea or even the potential that there could be is enough to support persona. That's the hope. The idea, which itself, this word idea, in itself is a problematic thing. Because in Nichivo, there's not even an idea. It's a total unplugged, zero. So when we have an idea that there could be something negative, that's fear. And it supports the persona. Even just the idea that there's a potential of something negative, that supports it. What he's talking about right here, when he says, with a single stroke, you're free from bondage, it means that within one blink of an eye, one little stroke of the brush, all of the most subtle things that supports the persona falls off. And as soon as that falls off, the persona has Nichiro. As soon as it has that, you have freedom. Now you're in a state of nirvana. This is nirvana. Okay. Once you're there, you have a unified mind, and it is in accord with the way. That's what he's talking about. And then he goes on to discuss. Look, when the mind is there, when it's in that state, now if we flip to the other side of the chart and we look at shunyata, whenever there is any inkling of a potential at all, the shunyata side, there's emptiness but a complete total potential, right? So we have this ultimate and this relative now in this harmony. We can clearly see all phenomena, anything whatsoever, is nothing other than potential. That's its emptiness. It's just purely potential. And we are able to clearly perceive that potential. Means we instantly recognize its dual nature. Very clearly. There's no academics involved. And there's not even, you have to remind yourself. All that's out. Everything is that plain. Self-illuminating is kind of like if you walk outside after a rain shower, right? You're sitting in your house, I don't know, you have headphones on and a blindfold, and you don't know that it's raining. And you take off your headphones and your blindfold, and you walk outside, and everything is wet. The idea, the small d dharma, the conceptual idea that everything is wet, that's a self-illuminating knowledge. You walk out, everything's wet. You don't have to study anything. You see that it's wet. And it's very clearly wet. Oh, look, it's wet. It's no longer dry. Right? Big, huge, horrible scientific problem here. When you go outside and everything is wet, you study it and go, what is that? Is that dry? Maybe not dry? Is that? Or do you just look at it and go, yeah, it's wet? I'm not going to sit on that seat or that bench because it's wet. If I sit on it, you know what it does to my robes? Makes me feel like I wet myself. Very uncomfortable. I'm not sitting on a wet seat. It's completely self-illuminating that it's wet. All objects, all phenomena, it becomes that clear. Even at their deepest natural state, becomes this clear. There's no longer any mystery. There's nothing hidden about it. Even the nature of it being wet is completely revealed. And I don't mean just that it is wet, but the whole thing of water forming on it due to whatever, condensation or falling out of the sky or whatever you want to say, all of it, the whole story of that thing is completely apparent to you. And it says, with no exertion of mind's power. All right, now let's get into something cool. How do we get to this mind? We're going to jump over to the Vajrayana path for a moment. So those of you that are not really into that, bear with me, because this part is awesome. Because it's not really Vajrayana, it's just the actors come from there. But we're going to pick one of my lineage's great-great-grandfathers, Milarepa. Milarepa's guru is named Marpa. Well, that's kind of a nickname. His name is actually Chuki Lodru. Chuki Lodru's guru is an Indian. So the Milarepa and Chuki Lodru are both Tibetans. And the Marpa, Chuki Lodru, is actually a farmer who knows how to speak Sanskrit. So I don't know how he learned it, but he did. He's a quite intelligent farmer. Maybe went to the Blackhawks or something like that. Went to that school, so he's got great education there in Iowa. And so he knows how to read all these ancient texts. But instead of just going off and translating ancient texts because he can speak the language, he has a guru that he relies on. And his guru is an actual Indian in India. So every time he wants to see him, he has to work like crazy, save up all of this money, which he would usually save a tremendous amount, and then he would blow all of the money on the journey to India, and then as soon as he got to his teacher, he would just go, here's all that I have left, minus a little bit to make the trip back. And oftentimes, his teacher would then give him one teaching, and the Marpa would be so moved, he'd say, here's the money that I was going to use for my trip back. And then his guru would fund his trip back. because his guru didn't really want him living with him. So you need to go.
Time to go home.
Yeah, the party's over. Go away. Because his teacher was, you know, quite, how would you say, firm? I guess. How would you describe Marpa?
Are we who are we talking about? Marpa or Naropa?
No. Marpa.
Strict.
Okay, so Tilopa, his teacher, super strict. Yeah, his Marpa's teacher was also like a Marpa. To Marpa. We don't know about Naropa. I don't know. I haven't heard what his thing is like. Anyhow, here's what his teacher has to say. Anybody have it from last night?
Yeah. There's six things.
There are six things that Tilopa said that will lead you to this state of having a unified mind that is in accord with the way. And here's the six things.
Tilopa's six teachings. Don't imagine. Don't think. Don't analyze. Don't reflect. Don't meditate.
Okay. These are his six pieces of advice.
There's one more. Keep your spirit in its natural state.
Yeah. These six pieces of advice. He says you want to know how to get a mind that is unified in accord with the way. Practice these six things. And we go, what? We're not supposed to meditate. We're not supposed to analyze or reflect or think about. How do we do this kind of a practice? And it's actually the Marpa who gives a discourse on it. And the Marpa says there are two forms of meditation that you can use to get to this state. We're only going to talk about one of them. Because you should only try one at a time. Don't mix them. Here's what he says to do. Sit in a very good posture. Make sure spine's straight. If you want to sit on the floor, that's fine. If you sit in a chair, that's okay too. Make sure that your knees are slightly lower than the hips. You know, all you guys know this stuff, right? Since we can't see you, I don't know if there's visitors or not. But you use a proper meditation posture. And then you breathe in. And when you breathe in to fill the lungs completely. And what you should do is count. So if you want to count to 5 or to 4 or to 10, whatever it is that you count how long it takes the breath in. And once the lungs are full, you hold your breath for the exact same count that it took to fill them. Then, you breathe out and empty the lungs completely. All air coming out. No air left in the lungs at all. And you breathe out in the same amount of time, the same duration that you were just holding the breath for. So let's just say that it's a count of 8. You breathe in for a count of 8. You hold it for a count of 8. You breathe out, emptying all the air in the lungs in the period of a count of 8. and then with completely empty lungs, you hold that for a count of eight. And repeat the cycle. Anyone know what this meditation's called?
Four-stage breath meditation.
All right. Since I can't see a show of hands, how many people have heard me teach this meditation before? Okay, everybody here. How about you guys in Blue Lotus? Have you heard this before?
Yes.
All right. Do any of you know how to use it other than just controlling the breath?
Probably not.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's great because I'm going to teach you what the MARPA says about it. This is what MARPA and Talopa and Milarepa say about this meditation. Why it's so powerful. To train ourselves to have a unified mind in accord with the way, we must become masters of our body, our physical body, and the energetic body. We have to become masters of our speech, and we have to become masters of the mind. Most of the time, the two hardest things that we have to work with is mastering the body and mastering the mind. Especially in meditation. Here's a very unique thing that is passed down from Shakyamuni Buddha. The activity of the mind reflects the nature of breath. So, if you're breathing very fast, your thought process will also be very fast, very active. If you are breathing very slowly, or almost not breathing at all, the activity of the mind will be almost non-existent. So, here's how we practice this. We start out with whatever we're comfortable with, because you don't want to go lightheaded and pass out and all of that, you know. So you want to try to, as naturally as possible, just follow the, however you're breathing right now, just take note of when you're breathing in. Unfortunately, most people, when they are learning how to meditate, they have to learn how to breathe. Because almost no one uses their lungs. I don't know how people live. I don't know why they're still alive and animated. It's like they're a bunch of zombies. Because they use less than 10% of their lungs. If you don't believe me, ask any doctor. It's true. We use less than 10% of our lungs. Even when we're working out, unless you when you make yourself work.
Exertion?
Exert yourself, and you're panting, then you're usually using all your lungs. But normally, when you're just like hanging out, driving your car, maybe walking, eating breakfast, you're not using your whole lung capacity. So we have to learn to use the lung capacity. So, without doing your best to not strain the body, you need to breathe at a normal rhythmic speed, but make sure you fill the whole lung. Hold the breath, breathe out, hold the breath. Now, when you start, you're probably not going to notice anything at all because you're keeping with your normal tendency of breathing, your normal rate, which means your mind is going to continue to act exactly how it always does. But here's where it gets awesome. the more comfortable you get with breathing. How funny is that? The more comfortable you get breathing as a human, right? So when you learn to take in oxygen, the mind, first of all, your breathing will begin to slow down, along with your heart rate and all that kind of stuff, but so will the thoughts. And as you get better at breathing, man, this sounds so ridiculous. As you get better at breathing without doing any kind of any kind of effort, this all has to be very organic. The breathing slows down, heart rate slows down, and the thoughts slow down to the point that you can now choose how to breathe. So you may take a breath in and then just not breathe for a half an hour. And you just won't have any thought. But it's not initiatival. It's a shunyata. Now, the quieter the mind gets, the more you will be able to see this mind. It will become luminous. You'll begin to see. It'll become very clear. The mind. So you'll be able to breathe in and hold it. And the nature of your own mind will become more and more self-illuminating. The more you see the nature of the mind, the more it becomes unified. Because the more clear it becomes, the two aspects of good versus evil, this versus that, start naturally falling off without any academic work or effort on your behalf. This four-stage meditation that you have is one of only two methods that can lead you to this state in the meditation. So whoever has received this four-part meditation teaching, whether it's from me or from any other teacher, they have, in all reality, given you the key to complete liberation already. You have one of the highest meditation practices that there is. And you can get your mind born in this way. Now, imagine this. When the mind becomes that quiet, do you think that thoughts and emotions and knowledge and imagination have any value at all when you have that kind of clarity? No, because you don't have to imagine what clarity is like or imagine what clarity is not like. You don't have to go back over all the notes in your head to figure out if you're meditating or not. You don't have to go through and say, oh, am I hitting all the bullet points of falling into a samadhi state? Then that kind of knowledge is useless. You don't need it. No analyzing, nothing. He says, in this world of suchness, there's neither the self or other than self. And that's where you will get a direct, immediate experience of unity. Well, that's all I could do. I can only get through that one little portion today. Otherwise, you'll be here all day. Who wants to try out that meditation? Anybody excited about it now? Because really, I mean, I would be like, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, you know, if you do this meditation, by the way, how often does this happen? You do this meditation, you'll become enlightened. You take this pill, you'll instantly become fat or skinny or whatever it is that you want. How many of hear that kind of snake oil sales pitch? Well, here's mine. I stole it from Milarepa, who stole it from Marpa, who stole it from Tilopa. Listen to this. You do this 4-stage breath meditation, and you can attain nirvana. I just told you how.
You gave us all 4 stages for free.
I gave you all 4 stages.
Give us 1 stage and say that you'll get the other 3
$69.99.
Three easy payments.
Yeah, we should have done like this whole thing where I give you breathe in for a duration. If you want to know any more about attaining nirvana, you got to come to my seminar. It's $185 per person, and I'll give you a bag lunch. Isn't that how they do it?
Yep.
No, look, keep your cars. I don't want them as gifts. It's a nice thought, but you don't have to give them to me. I'm not a Tilopa. Thank you, though. That was a generous offer. because that's what would have happened for Marpa. He'd have been like, wow, 4-stage breath meditation. Here's all the gold that I made in the last 5 years in my farming to get this teaching from you. So I just gave it right now. And I just told you exactly how to use it. It's connection between the mind and the body. And so in learning how to breathe, this is not controlling the breath. It's learning how to breathe. Controlling the breath is too much effort. Breathing like you're alive is a whole different thing. So you learn how to breathe because you are animated. And the connection between that and the mind, which you have a mind because you're animated. When you see those links, that's it. One more quick secret. If you're very lazy about your meditation and you're bored, sit outside. If you're overactive and you have a hard time sitting, you know, you're too antsy, sit inside in a closed environment. That's the other big secret. So, sit in your backyard with this great weather. If you feel drowsy or lazy, and if you're overly active, sit inside in a controlled environment, like a closet or something like that, where there's no stimuli. All right, and we're going to go right into a sitting.